Oh, hell yeah, this county's rich. It's real rich. Shoot, when it was booming, you'd come here at night and it looked like the stars.
And where we got where we are in Texas was due to one thing and one thing only, money. So what happened in Texas, and predominantly with wind, was the Texans realized very quickly that even though wind power is renewable energy and favorable perhaps for global warming perspectives, it's about money.
Welcome to a Business Daily Energy Special with me, Joe Miller, from the heart of the oil state of Texas, where the spirit of independence and the power of dollars and cents have paved the way for a surprising energy revolution.
They didn't do it by regulation, and the consumers will drive the decision of whether this is an effective public policy, not the politicians. And so far, the consumers in Texas have said, we want to see renewables.
It's a scorching hot afternoon here in Georgetown, Texas. So hot, in fact, that the town square is virtually deserted, save for the occasional local resident making a dash from an air-conditioned vehicle to an air-conditioned shop or office. This conservative city, in a county that has voted for the Republican candidate in every presidential race since 1976, and in a state that is almost synonymous with gushing oil fields and fossil fuel plants, is one of the very first in the United States of America to be powered entirely by renewable energy sources.
It's one of those things where it's like sort of strange that it's happening here, because it's, you know, we're just right smack dab in the middle of Texas. And
how do you think people around here feel generally about climate change? Do you think that's like an issue?
No.
There are too many that don't believe it's happening.
Yeah. They don't believe it's happening. They don't care if it's happening.
Yeah, I think it's something people are proud of. It's not the biggest topic of conversation.
I think there's a lot of people like from Austin, from Round Rock, like neighboring communities that kind of think like, oh, that's so bizarre being like in the oil capital, that there's this town that's like
that's all
renewable.
Quite a Republican town, right?
The whole county is, very much so.
Right.
It's unusual for, you know, such a conservative area to be so forward-thinking in, you know, renewable energy and things of that sort. So, but I bet you most people probably don't know.
To understand how this has come about, I've come to talk to the general manager of the city of Georgetown, a man called Jim Briggs.
I'm Joe, nice to meet you.
Joe, Jim Briggs, nice to meet you.
Jim's wearing a rhinestone belt, classic blue jeans, and a Stetson to block out the relentless sunshine. It's only 9 o'clock in the morning, so it's not quite 100 degrees Fahrenheit yet, but it'll get there quite soon.
Thanks for seeing us. It's so early in the morning.
Sorry.
First thing.
That's okay. It's Friday. It's not 100 degrees yet.
On summer days in Texas, air conditioning accounts for the majority of the state's energy needs, and it's one of the reasons Jim Briggs found himself unexpectedly making international headlines.
You know, a lot of people consider it's probably an energy revolution, and I guess I don't particularly consider that it's an energy revolution. I think we are the result of something that Texas started in the late 1990s, which was to deregulate the electric wholesale market and ultimately deregulate the Texas retail electric market, putting more competition into prices.
In 1999, George W. Bush, then the governor of Texas just mulling a presidential run, pushed through a bill which deregulated the electricity market in Texas with the hope that it would diversify the oil state's energy sources. The initial goal was just to have a few hundred megawatts of wind power, but now Texas has almost 20 to 30 times that amount.
They didn't do it by regulation, saying you must do this, these are penalties, and laying down law from government. They established a market and a setup to say natural forces of economic structure will take place to say whether this is beneficial or not. and the consumers will drive the decision of whether this is an effective public policy, not the politicians.
Do you get people from other city administrations around America come to you and say, Jim, show us how you did this?
I do. When people come in and say, how can I do it? You can do it in Texas. You can do this in California. I'm not sure in all places you can do what we've done. Fuel markets for natural gas and oil will fluctuate. They always have. One international event could shift the market, and we could be in a different scenario.
Whereas the sun shining and the wind blowing is pretty much guaranteed in Texas.
In Texas, you get a lot of sun and you get a lot of wind.
Texas's rush towards renewable energy, which has propelled it to the position of the seventh largest wind producer in the world, is not all that surprising for those who know the state well.
I think interest in wind energy in Texas goes back a long ways. If you think back to the folks that settled the Great Plains, images of that show windmills kind of popping up all over, and that's because there was a lot of wind. They used those particular windmills to harvest water back in the early 1900s, late 1800s. And as Texas grew, a lot of Texas's rural needed power out to remote areas. Some of those who had put up windmills started putting up what were called wind chargers, which are wind turbines for a house that would produce electricity. So there was really a grounding of interest.
Kate Galbraith works for the San Francisco Chronicle and is the co-author of the Great Texas Wind Rush.
Texas is kind of a just-do-it state. People don't mess around. They just, if they see an idea, something they want to build, they go build it. And so a lot of people were like, well, there's the wind. It's free. You don't have to mine it. Oil ruled the land for many generations, and it meant that Texans knew all about royalties. They were used to having energy sources of energy that produced money for them. And then along came people wanting to put wind turbines in, and they said, oh, sure, I mean, that's not going to interfere with oil. That's, as one person put it, that's drilling above the ground. Texas, unlike any of the other states in the lower 48, has its own electric power grid. One time I was on a bus in West Texas full of people learning about wind energy in Texas, and I'll never forget the person who was leading the tour got up on the bus and said, did you know that there are three energy grids in the continental United States, East, West, and Texas? And the whole bus burst into cheers because everyone is really nationalistic about this, and everyone was really happy that Texas had its own grid, but having its own grid means that you can be a lot more agile.
The grid is called ERCOT, or the Electricity Reliability Council of Texas, and Dan Woodfin is its senior director.
So basically what ERCOT does is when you, at your house, turn on the light switch, we make sure that the lights come on and that whatever electricity is being used to turn that light on, it's being produced by the cheapest power plants that can be used at that point in time to produce the power. And each 5 minutes, our computer system does an optimization that says, basically, we'll lay in the cheapest generation first, up to the most expensive generation. Generally, we don't prefer one type of energy or not. The idea of the market is that it's completely neutral to fuel type. And so wind power, its variable cost to produce energy is near zero. And so it will be, if the wind's blowing, it will be the cheapest thing. Coal and gas have fuel that they have to buy. So generally when the wind's blowing, when it bids in, the optimization will select it.
At this point, you could be forgiven for thinking that oil is over in Texas. But the substance that locals like to call Texas tea, or black gold, is still making millionaires thanks to a more modern technique known as hydraulic fracking.
We're just arriving into Tilden, which is the county seat, the main, I suppose, town here in McMullen County, although not very much counts as a town here. And already you can tell where the newfound riches in this county have come from. Dotted across the horizon are gigantic flames rising up into the sky. Freshly installed pipes carrying oil reserves to large tankers on the side of the road. You can smell it too. There's not a lot to look at on the flat beige landscape that flanks Texas State Highway 16. It's a monotonous two-lane road that's only occasionally interrupted by a single set of traffic lights in a largely deserted town. These are the first signs, along with the electrified fences and keep out notices on the depots of multinational energy companies, of the fracking boom that has made this the richest county in the United States of America. There aren't many people in McMullen, just about 800 in total, but the average income here is a whopping $300,000 a year. Tilden, one of the few inhabited areas in McMullen County, is a tough place and not one you'd immediately associate with wealth. There's a petrol station, a post office, and a couple of small restaurants. Oh, and there's a Boot Hill Cemetery where the famed gunfighters of the Wild West were once laid to rest.
Oil's back.
I don't know for how long, though.
Oil's back, says one migrant worker who's filling up on ice before heading to the nearby fields. He tells me salaries here can be as high as $120,000 a year.
Oil, hell yeah, this county's rich. It's real rich. Shoot, when it was booming, you'd come here at night and it looked like the stars, how many rigs were out. You know, it was unreal.
I read recently that this is the richest county in America if you take the...
McMullen, yeah, because there's not that many people. But there's a lot of lawsuits going on right now because the oil company's back in the boom. You know, they're shelling, and all of a sudden, when the prices go down, they start tightening up and they're not paying their royalties like they're supposed to. Because they're hurting, their bottom line's hurting. And there's a lot of lawsuits going around from the landowners to the oil companies. And then the oil companies are mad because they can't hardly, because Charles is going to be here in McMullen. Well, guess what? Everybody's related. And they, you know, they're not going to get a fair trial.
Well, there's still people that work. And then there's people that
just got lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those of us that still work for the ones that got lucky.
There have been pressures on the local fracking industry, like when the oil price dropped from highs of over $100 a barrel to below $30. But according to Kenny DeBose, people in the business just got better at it.
Certainly the economics of this industry rides up and down with the price of crude oil. The industry has been forced to become very efficient, and they have responded to that need quite handily. When average shale wells were beginning to get drilled in, let's say, 2010, we might have a drilling time of anywhere from 30 to 45 days. Now in places we've gotten that down to as little as 5 to 7 days, and maybe on average about 10 days. So the industry has responded to the economic realities of low oil pricing, relatively low oil pricing, quite handily.
Eagle Ford Shale, the rock formation that runs through McMullen, is just one of many so-called fracking plays in Texas.
There is no doubt we have knowably another 5 decades of production here.
5 decades. You could pump in that area for 5 decades.
Correct. And likely more.
Kenny DeBose is every inch the oil man. Having made his money as an engineer, he now runs websites that advise mineral rights owners, such as those in McMullen County.
I suspect across the shale play itself, there are 10 to 12,000 wells at this point. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of wells that have been drilled waiting to come online that simply have not come online yet.
And this is just Eagle Ford Shale.
Yes.
There are many more plays in Texas.
Exactly.
And do people literally, you know, as we might think, get a knock on the door?
More times than not, a letter in the mail, a packet in the mail with a lease form that says, wouldn't you like to sign up? And here's a, you know, nice check to go with it.
It's like winning the lottery.
Yeah, certainly can be. No, I mean, there are many instant millionaires made, no doubt.
So what to make of these contrasting stories of energy in Texas? The state that is the U.S.'s largest oil and gas producer is also the largest wind producer, and very soon it'll be the largest solar producer too. And according to Fred Beach, a director at the Energy Institute of the University of Austin, all of this is driven by one simple motive.
I was on the utility board when we were making those decisions, and it had nothing to do with renewables. It was all about the price point. One thing in Texas, and in the United States certainly, and probably even globally, that always trumps environmentalism is money. And where we got where we are in Texas was due to one thing and one thing only, money. Politics aside, everybody loves money. Yeah, it's price, baby. We've been lowering our CO2 emissions year on year for years now. Because of policy? No, because of low natural gas prices and because of wind and solar prices coming down. So we've been decarbonizing our energy sources for hundreds of years as we've gone from dung and wood to coal to petroleum to gas to nuclear to renewables. It's a natural decarbonization trend, and I don't see any reason to think that trend won't continue for the next 100 years. No policy required, no politics required. No Paris Climate Accord required.
But back in Georgetown, the conservative city in which climate change is far from a major concern, and where gas-guzzling pickup trucks and 4x4s are a common sight, the international recognition it's received for going 100% renewable has not gone unnoticed. Just like city manager Jim Briggs, most residents insist that the wind and solar energy sources that have been taken on in Georgetown have been for purely economic reasons.
Our biggest reward is when we get taken for granted. At some point in your career, you quit doing this for yourself and you start doing it for your grandkids.
This special edition of Business Daily was presented by me, Joe Miller, and produced by Sarah Trino.